Good afternoon. This is Ken McDermott Rowe. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, streaming at WPKN.org. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe, and our program In Context is a live call-in political show, and we're glad you joined us this afternoon. Joining us on the phone is my co-host, Gus Cantavero, who's traveling right now. Gus, do we have you on the air?
Yes, I recently drove by the Army War.
Wrong button. Sorry.
Okay, we still have Gus on the air?
Yeah, am I there?
Yeah, okay,
sorry,
great.
I meant to hit hold.
That's
sorry.
Great. And we also have a Marshawn McDermott Rowe behind the board, who's going to do double duty today because this is our war report. And Gus, you say you're on the road?
Yeah, I recently drove by the Army War College in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I was thinking of you guys while I drove by looking at the all the kids standing on the cannons and helicopters and such, thinking that they were just so much fun and so cool.
Well, thanks for joining us from the road. And today being the last Monday of the month, and In Context is on every Monday, and please visit us at our website, incontextreport.com. We do the War Report, and we try to accomplish three things in the War Report. First, we do a roundup of the major developments in all the wars around the world, whether it's Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Somalia, Libya, you name it. And many of these events are ones which have been overlooked by the corporate media. And, of course, that's part of WPKN's mission, is to bring you information that's not available in other media. But we also try to put, as our show suggests, all of these events in context to explain are the geopolitical significance. Who are the actors? Why are they doing what they're doing? And how does it fit into the overall global picture? And particularly, how does it affect us as Americans? And the third thing we try to do here, and which is, I think, most important, is we want to take your listener calls. We want to get your views on these important foreign policy issues. On every show, we want your calls. But today, we're focusing on the war on foreign policy. So let me give out our phone number. It's 203-336-9756. So jot that down, and we'll be taking your calls during the show. 203-336-9756. And if you'd like to email instead, send an email to Ken at mdrtalk.org. That's Ken at mdrtalk.org. Now, a couple important developments in the wars have to do with Syria, a possible intervention by the U.S. and NATO in Syria, possible attack by the U.S., Israel, NATO on Iran, but also something that's happening just today. I found out this morning it is a bill that's pending in the Senate, which would authorize the detention of U.S. citizens, and they could be held without trial, without charge, in military facilities, subjected to military tribunals. It's called Senate Bill 1867, and we have posted a copy of this legislation on our website. That's incontextreport.com. You can go there, you can click on a PDF, which will take you to the bill, and we identify the page numbers. There are five pages. It's actually two sections and a very long bill that's a defense authorization bill for the fiscal year 2012. But they stuck in two sections which will allow the military to arrest even American citizens right here in America without charge, hold them in trial for indefinitely. And you can also read about it at the ACLU site, where they describe this bill as an extreme position that will forever change our country if it is passed. So take a look at that site and tell us what you think. Take a look at the legislation. This bill was drafted in secret, believe it or not, in secret by Senators Carl Levin and John McCain, and it was passed in a closed-door committee meeting without any kind of hearing. So, and I found out about it today, believe it or not, and Gus and Marchand and I, we canvass as much news as possible, many news sources as possible, and I did not see this when I scanned the New York Times this morning, but I did see it on the ACLU website, and folks, I did see it on Press TV, which is the Iranian government website, but I didn't see it in our major media. So I'd like to get people's reaction to that, and we'd also like to get your reaction to the possibility of war in Syria and Iran. Again, our telephone number is 203-336-9756. So, Marchand, we want going to get your input on the military situation here in a moment, but since Gus is on the road and I'm not sure how long he can stay with it, I'd like to get your take, Gus, on this.
Yeah, the first thing that popped out to me there is just the fact that they call it the Defense Authorization Bill, as if without the bill, defense is not authorized. Is that kind of an interesting title that they put out there? Sort of, you know, the Patriot Act. If you're not for it, you're not a patriot.
That's right. That's right. If you're not for a $1 trillion defense budget, I guess you don't want to authorize defense of the country.
Yeah, you must hate the troops, right?
Obviously.
The Simpsons did a...
you should be arrested for giving, the comfort to the enemy. But clearly, you know, they always author these things in secret. You know, just like the telecommunications bills, they're authored in secret. You know, they always come out with some kind of, back-channel negotiations where they word these things in very confusing ways. And I don't know how long this bill is. I imagine it's in the hundreds of pages. And as you said, there's just 5 pages that deal with this section, and it's buried in there someplace. And you have to dig through and find it.
Yeah, just go to our folks. Just go to our website, incontextreport.com. You can read those 5 critical pages.
But yeah, exactly. And they bank on the fact that people won't find it or won't know about it, and then they won't call about it. And, leave it up to the foreign press to be the ones who actually report on it. They seem to care more about our civil liberties than we do. I don't know. I'm not up on this because I've been on the road since 7 a.m. this morning. But you said that it designates anyone outside the country as a foreign combatant, basically, right? So that means if you're an American citizen traveling abroad, does that mean that you're subject to this?
Well, the language, yeah, I think right now you're subject to it. I think what this does is gives the president greater authority to authorize the military to act within the United States. And by the way, President Obama said he does not support this. His attorney general says it's giving the military too much power in the United States. But it would give him new authority to authorize the military to arrest people in the United States, detain them without trial. Now, the language describes who could they arrest?
It's martial law, right?
Essentially, we're getting closer and closer. I mean, how do you know when you've crossed the line? Was it the Patriot Act? It describes it, the people covered by the legislation is a person who, anybody involved in 9/11, that's point.
Pretty
that's
obvious.
Paragraph one. Paragraph two is a person who was a part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or a source associated forces. Okay, including any person who's committed a belligerent act, who has directly supported hostilities in aid of such enemy forces. So it's broad enough, Gus, that I think it takes in the waterfront. And the proponents of the bill use the phrase, the world is the battleground. That's
right,
I think
right.
Senator Lindsey Graham uses that phrase. The world is a battleground. The United States is part of the battleground.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's interesting? This comes right on the coattails of, was it Newt Gingrich in the last debate saying that we need to have 2 sets of laws, you know, one for peacetime and one for wartime, where we get to suspend the Bill of Rights and the Constitution?
Did he say that in one of the debates?
Well, basically he was saying that, yeah, we need to have, he didn't go outright and say we have to suspend the Bill of Rights, but by inference, that's what he's saying. He said we have to have 2 sets of laws, mm-hmm. You know, basically mocking Ron Paul saying we can't gut the Constitution because we're at war. And he says, hey, forget it, we're at war. We don't have time for this kind of stuff. We need results.
Well, you know what's funny is it sounds very similar to what the Nazis said before they passed the Enabling Act. I mean, history has a very eerie way of repeating itself.
Uh-huh.
But they use similar pretenses. Oh, we're at war with the communists. The communists were the big terror fear weapon that the Nazis used to pass the Enabling Act, which is really was their equivalent of the Patriot Act.
This is night back 1933 after the Reichstag fire.
Exactly. And they blamed it on, oh, we have communist terrorists, they're Jewish terrorists, they're out to get you. Be afraid, be very afraid. And civil liberties, because nominally the Weimar Republic Constitution was in place the entire time the Nazis were there. You had free speech, but we were at war, was the logic the Nazis used.
That's right. Their constitution was in place the entire time, as ours is. But we're kind of creeping. And we've documented in the show, Gus and Marchand and I, this creep towards a dictatorship in America with the Patriot Act and the aftermath of 9/11 and what they call the continuity of government provisions, a directive signed by the president, which provide for essentially martial law in the case of an emergency.
It's a very frightening notion.
And again, if you'd like to call and weigh in on this, and I really urge all of our listeners to participate in this program, and we want to hear your calls, but also to contact your senators and express your views on this legislation. It's Senate Bill 1867, the part of the Defense Authorization Act, and it allows for military arrest. Being held without charge or trial indefinitely in connection with terrorism charges. And the call-in number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. And you can email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. Now, Marshawn, while this is going on at home, we're engaged in really a perpetual war. You might say it started in the fall of 1990 when Bush Sr. got us all ramped up for the first war against Iraq, and it really picked up steam after 9/11. We fought wars so far, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Libya, when Somalia, we caused the partition of Sudan. I'm probably missing something, but right now we're looking at a really getting close to war in both Syria and Iran. Could you talk about, Marshawn, what the recent developments are there, particularly with regard to the Soviet fleet, the American fleet?
Oh, well, it's a very little known fact, but something I think most Americans should be aware of. The Russians, when we were ramping up our war rhetoric, the Russians parked a fleet off the coast of Syria. Now, they have had a permanent naval base in the port of Tartus. And this is common knowledge. There's a Wikipedia article on it, believe it or not, at full places. But you Google it, Russian fleet in the port of Tartus. It was a permanent station built by the Soviet Union, and it was upgraded in 2009. And the Russians, in response to threats from NATO and Turkey for military actions against Iran, the Russians moved their fleet to the coast of Syria in the port of Tartus. The U.S. likewise moved a carrier strike force, the USS George Herbert Walker Bush, bitter irony, I would say, to the coast of Syria. So it seems like we're positioning ourselves for a military strike. Now, that fleet would also come into play in the event of a military strike against Iran. Syria, though, was the first obstacle, because if war breaks out with Iran, the countries that are going to hammer Israel are Lebanon and Syria, and they're in the closest proximity.
Now just to review for the listeners, the government of Syria is controlled by a family named al-Assad. It's basically a dictatorship, right? And historically, it has been, within the orbit of the Russians?
Historically, the al-Assad family, they were brought to power along with many of the old socialist Ba'athists, as they're called. That's really the Arab socialism. Regimes of Gamal Abdel Nasser, Muammar Gaddafi, and other dictators in the region. That's contemporary of Saddam as well. And so they all came to power about the same time.
So they are, logically, that we would want them within the U.S.-NATO orbit rather than within the Russian orbit.
And
the
exactly.
Russians, have the Russians taken the position that a U.S.-NATO attack on Syria, like the attack on Libya, will elicit a more forceful response from the Russians than the one in Libya, which they didn't really do anything?
I think so, in part because Gaddafi was so unpopular. Assad is a dictator like Gaddafi and Saddam were, but al-Assad has always been a close friend of the Russians. He's always cooperated with the Russian foreign policy. Really, Assad is to Russia what Mubarak was to the U.S., only a little bit more so because he hosts Russian forces. In fact, according to an article I read a couple weeks ago in Al-Manar, which is a Lebanese newspaper, Russia wants to station Alexander missiles, ballistic missiles, in Syria. So they view Syria as a strategic partner, almost a roadblock, if you will, to the U.S. ally, Israel.
So if U.S.-NATO were to launch an air attack, right now, let's back up a little bit. Back on August, we reported article in Debco, which is the Israeli intelligence newsletter, that NATO had been or was in the process of preparing plans to train and arm rebels inside Syria. Now it appears that those reports are true, because now we're getting reports out of Turkey, which borders Syria, that they have their encampments of Syrian army deserters. But it also may be, what's your sense that there may be actually be agents of U.S. and NATO operating in a military fashion inside Syria right now?
Oh, of that I have no doubt. This is, again, like with Libya, this is the bread and butter of what U.S. Army Special Forces do. The U.S. Army Special Forces branch was created. When we think Special Forces, we think Navy SEALs, Rangers, Delta Force, you know, all those. The actual, there is an organization called U.S. Army Special Forces. They're a branch of the Army, and what their mission is to go behind enemy lines and train insurgents. And the impression I get is that these guys, I mean, they're not a ragtag bunch of deserters. They are hammering al-Assad's troops. And al-Assad's troops, this isn't Libya. This isn't Iraq. These troops, al-Assad's troops are well-trained. They are Russian-trained. And they're getting really badly bloodied, which tells me that the people that they're fighting
are not amateurs. Here's an article from the New York Times of 26, just 2 days ago. Syrian militaries reported that 10 of its personnel were killed in an attack on their Air Force base southwest of Homs, which they said confirmed involvement of former foreign elements in the operations against the Syrian government.
Well, the Syrian Air Force, we do consider more of a threat than Gaddafi's Air Force, in part, again, because it is a relatively modern Air Force.
And they also now, the Syrians are not taking this lying down. There was a report in Press TV that Turkish sources say that Syria has turned its Russian-made Scud missiles towards Turkey. Now, why would the Syrians pointing their missiles towards the Turks? It's a fellow Muslim country. What's the relationship between Turkey and Syria?
Because Turkey and Syria have nominally held on and off relationships. Earlier, I guess, well, we're going back probably 2003, the Turks and the Syrians nearly came to blows over the fact that the Syrians harbored the PKK, the Kurdish resistance movement, although it's listed as a terrorist organization, but we like to support them. The Syrians relinquished their support for the organization just about a year or so ago when they decided they wanted trade deals with Turkey. And when they kicked out the PKK, the Turks and the Syrians' trade skyrocketed. It made both Damascus and Istanbul prosper immensely. The reason why the Turks are getting in on this now, getting in on toppling al-Assad, is they see an opportunity to expand their influence. A chance to expand their military influence, a chance to expand their political influence, and maybe beat the U.S. to it, and it does comply with U.S. and Israeli foreign policy. Now, what the Syrians are doing is the Syrians see that all of the attacks, any foreign special forces that are coming through Turkey. Any weapons that are coming through to the so-called deserters, the Free Syrian Army, as they're known, bit of an oxymoron, but they're a contradiction, I should say. They're all coming through Turkey. And so what the Syrians, I think, are hoping to do is either put pressure on Turkey by saying, we're not afraid to hit you.
Yeah.
We have Scuds and we will hit you. And in fact, Iran, an article in Press TV, as well as it was in Al Jazeera and it was in all the other major news networks, said that Iran, in the event war breaks out with Israel or the United States, Iran is going to strike the U.S. ballistic missile installations in Turkey. So Turkey has become de facto a U.S. frontline ally.
Of course, it's part of NATO. Now, as we discuss this, listeners, we're not coming out of the perspective that we're pro-Assad or anti-Assad. What we're trying to figure out is, what are the consequences of this seeming of further expansion of the war going to be for us as Americans? Is this war policy in our best interest? And we'd like to hear your thoughts on that. If you call us at 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. Now, in September, Marshawn, we were talking about the possibility of an Israeli attack on Iran. What is the likelihood of that happening? Is it look like the Syrian situation may come to a head before there's any military action against Iran?
I certainly think it's really tough to say. The best example, like I say, history repeats itself. There is nothing new. The biggest example I can find that parallels this is World War I. We have blocks of superpowers, and this has happened more times than just World War I, but it's the best example. You have the Chinese and the Russians coming into their own as imperial powers. You have the U.S., the old imperial power with her allies in NATO and our satellite countries like the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia. As these empires expand, they get ever closer to coming to blows.
Yeah.
Now, the
yeah.
big question is, this is like a giant powder keg. The question is, what is the spark that will set it off? It could be an Israeli strike on Iran. It could be we decide to militarily intervene in Syria, and the Russians say, that's it, we've had enough. we're sending troops. It could be there's an accident and we hit a Russian ship. It could be...
You never know. Well, look, the murder of the Archduke of the Austro-Hungarian Empire by a Serbian nationalist was the spark that set off World War One.
Exactly.
But it tends to distract you from the fact that all the players were in line. They're aching for a war. It was gonna come. And as William Engdahl showed, back in those days, oil was again very important. A lot of it had to do with the near completion of the Berlin to Baghdad railway. Not something people talk about, but when you look at the parallels to today, it was about access to oil. And the British didn't want that to happen because it would have made Germany independent. Energy independent, and it would have made the British Navy irrelevant.
It would have made Germany the dominant power. And that's where the big issue comes in again. If Russia vicariously through Iran and China vicariously through Iran controls access, I mean, the Russians actually held a large training operation, joint training operation with the Pakistani Special Forces in a big military show. And China's been declared Pakistan's greatest friend. So if China controls Pakistan and eventually Afghanistan, they control oil, natural gas routes. If Russia vicariously through Iran or through having actual troops controls the oil in Iraq, Iran, and eventually places like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, they now are become the dominant superpowers.
That's
and
right.
We become irrelevant.
That's right.
Can I add one thing?
Yeah,
oh,
Gus,
please,
go ahead. Gus. We're joined by Gus Cantavero on the road, our in-context host. Go ahead, Gus.
I just wanted to add that, yes, it's hard to find a war that isn't about access to minerals or oil or other supplies. But in the past, when it was about just controlling who made the profit off of the sale of that oil, or, you know, just saying that this is mine, this is now oil solely for the use of the British Empire for the Americans. In these days of the free market, where all the oil is kind of flooded into one market and sold at market price, it's more about the suppression of oil and resource now. So instead of saying we're going to allow Iraq to sell their oil, and because they wanted to do it in euros, that would have diverted the profits from supporting our fiat currency. We wanted to say, okay, we're going to take it over and suppress the sale of it so that it artificially increases the price, thereby propping up the dollar market.
That's right. I think that that's a good point, and it isn't just quite getting the oil and pumping it and bringing it back to America. A lot of it is about denying other countries, and in particular,
exactly,
the Chinese access to oil.
Because China in of itself, and a lot of people don't know this, but China has no oil. It's a country devoid of oil.
Marshawn, before the show, I was interested in that very question. Who has the oil? And I went through some research sources, and I just listed the top oil and natural gas, which also is a hydrocarbon fuel, and you can equate so many cubic meters of a natural gas to oil. The top is Russia. When you combine the Russian natural gas, it's number one with their oil supplies. It's over 375 billion barrels. Number two is Iran. So between Iran and Russia, they have like over 700 billion in the equivalent of oil barrels. The United States, on the other hand, between our natural gas and our oil, we have about 70 billion. So we have about one-tenth the energy supply of Iran and Russia.
Ours is untapped. We suppress the access to our own resources.
Well, these are reserves as of reported by the oil companies as of this past year, 2010.
You mean when it's already out of the ground and in barrels just sitting there?
No. These are actually in the ground. They have 10 times more. And Gus, if the
I know that we have at least 8 or 10 times what we actually already know, just untouched. Like, we don't even allow most of the Alaska reserves.
I'm not sure whether that's included in these official estimates, but
okay.
If you combine if Saudi Arabia, for example, were to be taken over by Iran, and which has about 264 billion in reserves, this is waiting to come out of the ground, and if Iraq, which is now Shiite, were to combine, that's another 150 billion barrels, and then you've got Kuwait with 100 billion, which is right logically part of Iraq, and that was their position and caused the first Iraqi war. You can see how there will be a tremendous shift in the world power if all this goes in the other way.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've turned a blind eye to the unrest in Bahrain and in Saudi Arabia, people agitating simply for the right to vote. I mean, in Bahrain, if you're a Shiite, you're not allowed to participate in government. You're not allowed to run for really fundamentally to be in the military. You're not allowed to be in the security forces. You're not allowed proper representation. You're not even allowed proper civil liberties. You commit a crime, you disappear to a prison. They torture, abuse, and execute people at will. Yet we are perfectly fine with that. What Assad is doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, we have a problem with that, but not with – but the whole reason is because we're terrified of the notion that these regions or countries might become independent of the U.S. influence. They might have a revolt, and because they're Shia, they might have an inherent tie, at least in our mind's eye, to Iran, and all these vast oil resources will go to Iran. In fact, the majority of the Saudi oil is located in the east of Saudi Arabia in the Shiite – predominantly Shiite region.
You're listening to In Context, War Report, our monthly roundup of the war news. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can reach us at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756 to join the conversation with Marchand, Gus, and Ken on WPKN's In Context, War Report. Yeah, go ahead, Gus.
Arch, I just want to frame something that you just said. You said, Donald, we're okay with it, how they abduct people and bring them to black sites and torture them and so on and so forth. Not only are we okay with it, we're trying to adopt that way of life and import that form of tyranny. As we started with the top of the show, with the Defense Authorization Bill, trying to authorize, you know, the world as a battlefield and every single person in it is a combatant.
Exactly. I mean, I've traveled to the Middle East myself. I lived in Egypt for collectively about 6 months. And one thing I saw, and this is what Americans need to be aware of when these kind of laws get passed. If you have a pamphlet that the government doesn't like, there was somebody who was distributing pamphlets that were anti-Mubarak. This is going back about a year or so. That were anti-Mubarak, and I picked it up. My Arabic isn't that great. I couldn't read it really well, but I was told to drop it. I said, put that down. Don't touch that. Just, God forbid somebody sees you with that. You will get arrested, taken away to black sites where they perform the most grotesque tortures. I mean, I'm talking about pulling out people's fingernails and things like that. And these are what the despots like Mubarak and King Hamad in Bahrain and King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia are friends due to their people. And that's the direction we're starting to head, because they all started with these same Enabling Act-style laws. Mubarak called it the Emergency Act. The Bahrainis have something similar, and so do the Saudis.
That's right. As you're both pointing out, it's hard to have an empire abroad and a democracy at home.
Well, it's hard also when you say it's okay for King Hamad to murder and oppress his own people. It's okay for women in Bahrain to be raped by the police. But we don't do that. We're nicer guys. They're just our allies. It's hard for that not to end up transitioning into your own country.
What was it? Now, Gus, did you have something to weigh in on that?
Well, I was going to say, it's hard to support something like that abroad and not allow it to filter back home. You know, when you have corruption at the top, as you go down through the layers of the pyramid of corruption, by the time you get to the bottom, the minions are raping and pillaging. You just cannot have... You cannot condone that at the top of the level and not allow it to filter down. It's just inevitable.
And this perpetual state of war trumps everything. It trumps every domestic spending priority.
Yeah.
It trumps civil rights. It's all. So you just say frighten people and say it's national security and you get what you want.
And we see what we end up with. You know, last week we saw the TSA agent who was arrested after he raped and sodomized a woman after he flashed his TSA badge as a form of authority. And, you know, these are the kind of creeps who end up with this kind of power. So people, you know, if you want security, you're going to sacrifice liberty, that's what you're going to end up with, because corruption is always attracted to positions of power without exception.
And again, you know, you see the same propaganda tools. Really, countries like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, our supposed allies, are petri dishes, if you will. They are tests, living tests of what we think might work here.
And these are the states that supported our position in the Arab League, right?
They're like greenhouses of horror.
Exactly. Greenhouses of horror. I love that.
But they're the ones who vote for sanctions on Syria. But it makes it sound like it's pitched in the press as if this is a humanitarian act. But actually, it's a bunch of despots. These emirates and whatnot, who are backing up U.S. NATO's efforts to overthrow Assad.
There's no greater hypocrisy. They were joking in the media about, Syria is going to be on the Human Rights Commission. Meanwhile, I mean, it is the height of hypocrisy for King Hamad or King Abdullah or General Tantawi in Egypt to say, ah, well, you know, what Assad is doing is wrong. They're guilty of all the exact same crimes, using violence against their own people, use of rape rooms, torture, murder, mass executions. They're all guilty of the exact same thing. Robert Williams said it best. He said it's like a bunch of lepers judging a beauty contest.
Well, now, all of this is playing out in the context of the great power confrontation. That is Russia, China, the U.S., and NATO. And part of the strategy appears to be, and the Russians and Chinese perceive it this way, is that they're being encircled by the U.S. and NATO. And one of the recent articles I saw had to do with the Russian stating its opposition to the European missile system that NATO is deploying in former Warsaw Pact countries like Poland and Bulgaria and Romania. Could you talk about that, Marshawn?
Well, absolutely. The missile shield, presumably, and I want to ask our listeners if this makes any sense to anyone, because if it does, please call in and tell me, enlighten us, because that's, you know, we're involved media. We want to involve the American people. What presumably the missile defense shield is meant to do is defend Europe against nuclear ballistic missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles launched from rogue states, quote unquote, like Iran and North Korea. Now, why you would need a missile shield in Poland to protect France from a missile that's launched to its south makes absolutely no sense. From a military standpoint, it is abundantly clear that this missile shield is designed to hem in the Russians. It is designed to point missiles at Russia. It is a Cold War style strategy, the Russians called it that, and that's what any independent military analyst would call it. What we're trying to do is hem in the Russian military, hem in the Russians, and the Russians hate that feeling of being hemmed in. They're paranoid about security. So it automatically elicits a very hostile reaction from inherently the Russians.
In fact, President Medvedev warned, and this was 3 days ago, that Moscow would target U.S. missile defense sites in Europe if the United States goes ahead with its planned deployment.
Oh, yes. And just imagine this for a second. Imagine if you were to have the Mexicans park missiles pointed at along the U.S.-Mexico border, and you were to have the Canadians set up missiles along the U.S.-Canadian border, and they say, but this is to protect you against missiles coming from Argentina. It makes absolutely no sense, and inherently the Russians feel very threatened by it. So will the Russians launch a first strike against them? I doubt it, but in the event war breaks out, they will, I'm sure, hit these missile sites. And many of the host nations have said, and in fact, I'm trying to remember whether it was Bulgaria or Romania, it currently escapes me which one, but one of them said, we're not the ones who are doing this. This isn't our missiles. You know, these are the Americans. It's just they're trying to disassociate themselves from these missiles as much as possible because they know if war breaks out, they don't want Bucharest to be bombed by the Russians.
Gus, did you have a comment on that?
I know, but I do love the visual or the explanation of how Canada is going to protect the missiles from Argentina. That's pretty funny. I do think that there are a lot of people in this country who actually wouldn't buy that, though. There are too many people who just don't even know the geopolitical ramifications of things, and they would actually feel safe. They would say, oh, that there are friendly neighbors from the north just looking out for us, not realizing that.
And that appeal to safety.
Sweep the feet up underneath us at any moment.
It's hard to argue with that. And there was another very important development, Marchand, in terms of Russia's relationship with Europe. And, of course, the EU was mostly in our camp through NATO. But just a few days, 3 weeks ago, the Russians and the Germans opened a hugely important natural gas pipeline called Nord Stream. I didn't see anything about this in the corporate media. But this new natural gas pipeline will provide enough energy to sustain 56 million West European households. And the pipeline runs under the Baltic Sea. Now, why does it run under the Baltic Sea? This is really important. Up until recently, 80% of Russians' natural gas exports, and that's their big export, Russian economy is an energy economy, went through the Ukraine. And we've sponsored a revolution in the Ukraine, and we were at least at some point able to cut off the transit of Russian natural gas through the Ukraine to their many customers in Europe. So what they said is, forget about it. We're going to build a new pipeline under the Baltic Sea. Nobody can mess with it. So now there's this huge trade energy connection between the Germans, the Europeans generally, and Russia. And what does that do, Marshawn, do you think, to the NATO-US alliance?
I think it negates a lot of the assurances we have from Europe that they will jump to our aid. I mean, there was an incident not that long ago. NATO had, the European countries had agreed to something. I don't remember what it was. It was some maybe trade agreement or security agreement they had with the United States, and the Russians were opposed to it. So they cut off all oil and natural gas exports to Europe, and the Europeans crumbled under the pressure, because it's pretty much would be the equivalent of the power company just coming in and shutting off the lights. If all our electric plants were in Canada and they just turned off the lights, I mean, it means that if ultimately we go to war with Iran or we go to war with Syria and the Russians are opposed to it, we tell the Europeans, well, you know, the Germans, you're sending a division, and the French, you're sending a division, or the Foreign Legion, and all the Russians have to do is say, no, you're not. We'll turn off your power. And there's nothing they can do. All the natural gas and oil are in Russia. What are we going to do? Reroute oil from Saudi Arabia up to Europe? I don't think so.
In any event, do the Germans want to be involved with a war with Russia?
It's not a matter of whether they want to or not. Often treaties are so binding,
yeah,
you don't have a choice.
Which is actually what got them in Afghanistan was the NATO treaty. Actually, listeners, it was the NATO treaty that was invoked to get all of these allies from Europe into Afghanistan, because 9/11 was an attack by a foreign country on America, requiring them to join us in response.
Exactly. And we can argue whatever we like, but at the end of the day, the Germans know and the rest of the Europeans know, the Russians turn off their gas and electricity, they are literally back into the Stone Age. It would destroy, I can't emphasize enough, it would utterly destroy the European economies. So even if they wanted to intervene on our behalf, ultimately they couldn't. And that's the significance of this. It pretty much puts all of Europe under the economic thumb of the Russians.
They're tied together. You're listening to In Context, a political call-in show on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, streaming at WPKN.org. And you're welcome to call in to speak to me. My name's Ken, or Marchand, our military affairs commentator, or Gus Cantavero, our fellow host, who's on the road. And the number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. And we're talking about the possibility of a tremendous expansion of the war, either with the involvement of Syria, possibly Iran, or, would this bring in the great powers like Russia and China? And we're also talking about a related development here at home, because we might say the war is not strictly a foreign phenomenon. There's new legislation which is supposed to be voted on today, Senate Bill 1867, Defense Authorization Act, which includes two sections. And you can read those sections by going to our website, incontextreport.com. Look at it yourself. That's incontextreport.com. I just posted a link to the legislation, and you can read it yourself, but it appears to, it's an effort to make, by its own proponents, to make the entire world, including the United States, a battleground, so the president can authorize the U.S. military to arrest people right here in the United States and hold them indefinitely without charge or trial and put them before a military commission for...
There's something to be said for incrementalism with the continuity of agenda in our government. You know, no matter what happens year to year or election to election, we have Republicans and Democrats. We end up going down the same road regardless, whether you think you're a peaceful, progressive Democrats or not. You know, we end up going down the path of empire, and all these things are trial balloons. This bill may not pass this time, but it's going to be brought up again and again and again until it does pass, and we'll just have the right scare tactics and threats until public policy changes and it gets in line with this continuity of agenda that the globalists really want. I mean, look at the empire wars that we wage right now. It was incredibly unpopular. After World War II, we had the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, and then there's a break on serious wars for a while. But we did have, because there was the Cold War, but up until you had a flurry of small conflicts with things like Serbia, Bosnia, Somalia, and then from then on, it's just one after the other, and now it's many at the same time with no end in sight. So you can see that the American public has just become comfortable with occupation and empire, and these things just creep into public view. It's amazing how they find a nook and just live there forever.
In fact, we had an email earlier to our show from on, I believe we had an email earlier, it just got deleted, but it had to do with that very phenomena. Are we being prepared for a larger war by our leaders? And that is, I think, a serious, thank you for that email, because it seems like we're getting used to, progressively getting used to the notion,
yeah,
of a wider war, and especially with the, you know, the restrictions on civil rights at home, the constant bombardment, that you're in danger, that terrorism is really a homegrown phenomenon. We've seen those recent incidents, like the foiled bombing attempt in Times Square, and other incidents where we've been led to think that there are all these terrorists around that are ready to do us harm. So we really need to be in a constant state of war.
Guys, just to let you know, I'm going to have to leave you in about 5 or 10 minutes, but we can continue till then.
Oh, well, that's great, because I think we have about 10 minutes left in the show, and if you'd like to join the conversation, we've been talking about the expansion of the war, possible expansion of the war, and about the possible adoption of a Military Detention Act by the Senate today. Give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. We were talking earlier about how the grander, the geopolitical picture, which is the encirclement by U.S. and NATO of Russia and China as well. And we talked about the missile system in that regard. But there's also something going on in Pakistan that relates to China. There was recently a kind of special forces. There was a special forces exercise, right, involving Chinese and Pakistani troops. What was that? I was in Pakistan in our camp.
Well, this was a story covered in Fox News, and what surprised me is you think this would be headlines everywhere, but it was buried deep in the world of foreign affairs section. But what it was Pakistan and China have recently signed a mutual security agreement, which means they're going to cooperate on issues of security significance, terrorism and whatnot, which is, again, a very nebulous statement. But the Pakistani government feels that we can no longer protect them. We're demanding that they launch attacks on the Pakistani Taliban. Of course, the Pakistani government is militarily in no position to do it. It would be like Germany ordering the Vichy French army against the Russians, you know, a hopeless effort. So the Pakistanis have decided to sign a peace treaty, which they did, with the Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban, the Haqqani Network, which is an organ of the Taliban. And
the Pakistanis, our ally in the war against the Taliban, has signed a peace treaty with the Taliban.
Yes, because ultimately they're not stupid. They don't care. Fundamentally, the Pakistani government, and you got to think about it from their perspective, they do not really care if, you know, the U.S. geopolitically sinks. They really don't. What their main concern with is, am I going to stay in power? Am I going to get toppled, and am I going to get shot?
Well, it also has to do with India, doesn't it? The Karzai government is real cozy with India, Pakistan's major rival. So that makes them, any enemy of my enemy has got to be my friend.
Well, very true, too. But I think ultimately, in the end, what it boils down to is survival in the first place, and then to, as you said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So if Karzai gets toppled, all the better. And so the Chinese also pledged their undying support. The Pakistani president called the Chinese Pakistan's dearest friend. And as part of this new treaty, the Chinese and the Pakistanis held a joint training exercise in Pakistan. Now, to give you some idea of what this entailed, they practiced raiding, quote-unquote, terrorist training camps with something like 500 Chinese paratroopers and numerous Chinese attack helicopters. And this wasn't a tiny show force. I mean, 500 guys, that's almost a battalion. So this is a relatively large force of Chinese special forces that have come into Pakistan on behalf to support the Pakistani government.
So there's a joint interest here, because the Chinese have Muslim separatists in the western part of China, right?
And they
take, some of them are taking being harbored in parts of Pakistan, right? So this is an effort to, they feel that they have a joint interest in suppressing what they see as Islamist extremism.
It's also a very smart game, because China took a very interesting view towards the Muslims, because while China is a nominally atheist country, one of the things that they did that I think was rather unusual was they said Muslims can have their mosques, they can go to their services, but they have to read a Chinese-approved version of the Quran, but they don't they didn't go out on a persecution rampage against the Muslims the way they did the Buddhists and the Christians, because I think they felt that the Muslims had a lot of outside support.
Right.
So what this treaty with Pakistan does is it tells the Muslims in Xinjiang, the region of China where they're predominant, and it tells the Uyghur people in they're two separate. There are Han Chinese Muslims, and there are ethnically different Uyghur people who are Muslims. And it kind of tells them, listen, China's not a country that hates Islam. We have an ally that's a Muslim country. And maybe they can kind of shuffle some of their Muslims over to Pakistan.
Well, now, you say they're allies. They have the Pakistanis have now proclaimed the Chinese to be their all-season best friend, right? How does that affect our relationship with Pakistan?
It's forcing us out of Pakistan. The funny thing is that the Pakistanis told us they cut off our supplies after this incident where we accidentally, quote-unquote, killed 28 Pakistani soldiers, which I don't know about you. Seems kind of hard to accidentally do. Accidentally kill 28 Pakistani soldiers in two...
What was that, Gus?
I said whoops.
Exactly. In two different observation posts. And these things are marked. They're border posts. They're marked with Pakistani flags. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm dumb. I don't know.
Yeah, we only have about 5 minutes left. So, listeners, if you'd like to get in a question or a comment on this, the war report, we're at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. And, you know, we should, before we go. Yes,
I have a press story here. I'm sorry. This is, I think, rather breaking news. On Russia Today, the Russians have just announced that Moscow is deploying warships at its base in the Syrian port of Tartus. And they're deploying a heavy aircraft carrying missile cruiser, Admiral Kuznetsov, to off the port. So they're actually undocking their ships from the port and deploying them to the waters just off the coast of Syria.
So the question is this 1914? Is it 1912? We don't know, folks. But we want to alert you to the fact that we are moving steadily closer to a major war, and it isn't going to be a good. It's not going to be pretty. And I think that you all should be informed about what's going on and discuss it with your friends. And discuss it with, above all, with your elected representatives. Let them know how you feel about this. And these are often presented to us. Do we have a caller, Marshawn?
Yes, we do.
Oh, please. You're on the air?
Wrong button, sorry.
Hello, you're on the air with WPKN In Context. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just wanted to comment on this new bill. I think at this point, if we don't elect Ron Paul president, we're all ended for empire and the republic's gone. Well, I really think it's down to that.
Well, thank you very much for that call, caller. Appreciate your participating.
Well, 2012, or it's over.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, caller.
Right.
And of course, we had Ron Paul's national spokesman, Bruce Fine, on our show just earlier in the month. And he presented, of course, amongst his other positions, Ron Paul's very strongly opposed to our foreign wars. And he was apparently on the floor expressing his concerns about this new legislation. And now these wars are presented to us as if they are somehow ad hoc affairs. Do we have a... Oh, okay. Ad hoc affairs. And that they're motivated, let's say, by self-defense in the case of Iraq or humanitarianism in the case of Libya. But an interesting interview that you may have seen, and you can watch it on YouTube, it's only about 1.5 minutes long, with General Wesley Clark, you want to look at. And it's was on, just go to YouTube and put in General Wesley Clark. He gave this interview to Amy Goodman back in 2007. And he said that a few days after 9/11, he went into the Pentagon and saw one of the generals he used to work with. Now, Wesley Clark was a supreme NATO commander. He was top dog. And he said the general called him into his office and he says, "I don't understand it, General Clark, but a decision has already been made to attack Iraq." And then he said, they were both puzzled. And then General Clark said, "I went back a few weeks later and with the same general." And the general said, it's gone beyond Iraq. He said, "Take a look at this memo." And General Clark said he got this memo in his hand, which came from the Office of the Secretary of Defense, stating that in the next 5 years, now we're talking probably October of 2001, in the next 5 years, the plan was in the Pentagon that we would take out 7 countries over the next 5 years: Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, finishing with Iran. And that's what General Clark spoke in a televised interview back in 2007, about a meeting he had back in 2001.
And from that same group of meetings, there was also a map that surfaced that was actually talking about segmenting and dividing and subdividing the Middle Eastern countries according to, you know, religious sect.
That's right.
And so,
balkanizing
and
the area.
Make the regions much more easy to manipulate and play off against each other.
Excuse me, Gus, I think we have one more call. Time for one more call. Do we have a caller on the air?
Yeah, hi.
You're on In Context, WPKN. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Well, I just wanted to say I think, you know, this country's in a really bad state right now. And with everything that's going on right now with our government and stuff, I personally don't trust it right now. I think there's a lot of influence over our government right now. And I agree with you guys 100% that I do think our government is getting us, you know, set for some kind of a major war. Mm-hmm. And I think that China is definitely going to be a part of it. It was the thing that they showed on the internet last week where in their desert that they had all these things in the desert. And basically it was a diagram of Washington, D.C. And they were California.
Oh, I saw that, Mark. Do you remember I told you about that? I think I forgot to send you the link. There were those bright white and some blue painted diagrams in the middle of the middle of the Chinese desert in the northwest. They were something like 18 miles wide. You're exactly talking about, the diagram Washington, D.C., I did see the overlay of D.C., and I didn't quite think it was exactly that. I think that was kind of a stretch, and they could actually just take satellite images and practice that. But I do think that this was a practice for some kind of optical recognition satellite technology to be able to guide a missile according to, you know, finding intersections or something like that. Who knows? It could be even finding a moving target driving along.
Can I ask a caller question? We have to go in just a few seconds. Are you involving yourself in the political presidential campaign? Do you see any candidate that appeals to you?
Absolutely. And I agree with the last caller, 100% Ron Paul. I think he's the only one that is trying to stay with our Constitution. I think he's the only one that seems to be truly, you know, on top of the issues, and I really think that he's, you know, he would really help guide this country back to where it should be.
Well, caller, thank you for calling, and I think you've had the last word, because we're just about out of time for this edition of In Context, the War Report, and we will be on again. Our next show is on December 14th. We're on every Monday except the first Monday when we have the WPKN Listener Report. So thanks very much for joining us.
InContextReport.com.
That's our website, and you can see a copy of the new bill for military detentions. Thanks for joining us for Ken and Gus and Marshawn. See you again soon. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Defend your freedoms before they're gone.